everybody. I'm Poppy Muchumi, member of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology. I'm deployed by the African National Congress.
I am Vincenza, member of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology. I'm representing AMC. Thank you.
I am Anton Albert from the Freedom Front Plus, and I'm also a future astronaut.
I see there is a new member who just joined us.
Chair, please excuse me for being late. I'm sorry, I got lost, actually, which is inexcusable, I know. My name is Sue van der Merwe. I'm a Member of Parliament for the ANC. I'm also on the Trade and Industry Committee, and I've been asked to represent that committee here today from the ANC side. I think somebody else is also here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, especially from the members. I got the message. I had a chat with your chair yesterday, and she told me what engagements your committee has that coincide with our engagement here, but she did promise that she'll try her best to get some people coming in. Thank you for coming in. Anyway, yes. Let the delegation from the department introduce themselves first, and then I'll come to the observers who I usually like them also to introduce themselves so that we know who is here. But let me first come to the delegation.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Val Monsami. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Research, Development and Innovation in the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Nomfuneko Majaja. I'm representing the Department of Trade and Industry. I'm coming from a division known as Industrial Development Division and responsible for a chief directorate known as Advanced Manufacturing and Space Force within that chief directorate.
Thank you very much. Also from yourselves, I know the rep from the ministry. Introduce yourself.
My name is Nguyen. My surname is Franz. Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry of Science and Technology. Thanks.
There is also the assistant of the committee secretary. I'll go back there to all of the people at the periphery.
Sure. Hi, I'm Tamar Khan from Business Day.
I didn't hear that.
Tamar Khan from Business Day.
Oh, Business Day. Okay.
My name is Richard Davis. I'm a journalist with SALPA.
Good morning, my name is Marga Herling. I'm with the committee section from Trade and Industry.
Good morning, my name is Chel Kulingsa from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody who has introduced himself or herself. I think we must as well just start hitting the ball running. DG is up there.
Thanks, Chair. Essentially, we'll be doing this presentation in 2 parts. So,
Chair,
is it? Okay. I'll get closer to the mic. Is that better? Sorry about that. Essentially, what we're trying to do through this presentation is give a sense of the role differentiation between the South African Council for Space Affairs and the South African National Space Agency. So, essentially, in terms of the outline of the presentation, we'll look at the legislative mandates. In fact, there are two, the Space Affairs Act and the South African National Space Agency Act. We'll look at the linkages between space policy and space strategy. And then we'll talk around the Council, the South African Council for Space Affairs, and the South African National Space Agency and what their specific mandates are. And then also look at a question that was raised around the astronomy, the South African Astronomical
why we decided that we should convene both of you, so that, you know, with this International Astronautical Congress coming, we need to clarify exactly how trading industry and the Department of Science and Technology are working on this and who is responsible for what, so that we start planning in good time. Already these paper, these people, they have already written to some of us, wanting to, you know, to know where we are now with preparation. So that's why, and they want also some of us to present papers in this. So it's very important to know how exactly you have organized your departments. We here in Parliament, as portfolio committees. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We'll get to that in the end of the presentation. If we can start with the legislative mandates, essentially the Space Affairs Act, which is Act 84 of 93, and it was amended in 1996. I'll kind of look at the specific sections in the Act that talk about policy and the South African Council for Space Affairs. But essentially Section 2 calls for the determination of policy. And there are two purposes of doing so. The one is in terms of meeting our international commitments and our responsibilities. And there are a number of treaties and conventions, which my colleague will talk to later on. But essentially, we have to look at our responsibility in terms of upholding those commitments. And then also, if you look at the timing of the Act, that was in 1993, when the sort of nuclear program was being disarmed at the time. And there was a close link between nuclear and space in terms of the launch vehicle that was being put in place in terms of launching a satellite, which could be used also for launching nuclear weapons and other weapons as well. So as a consequence, the space program suffered when the nuclear program was kind of being geared down. So the second bullet point was around controlling and restricting the development, transfer, acquisition, and disposal of dual-use technologies. Now the point here is that a lot of the technologies that goes into the space industry are actually dual-use in nature. They can be used in missiles, weapons of mass destruction, and so on. And so there is also a Non-Proliferation Act of the Weapons of Mass Destruction. And if you look at these two acts, the Space Affairs Act and the Non-Proliferation Act, you'll see there's a close linkage. In fact, the same group drafted the two acts. So it was drafted through the same lens of non-proliferation, essentially. Then Section 3 of the Space Affairs Act, which talks about compliance of policy, and essentially what it says is that all ministers that are responsible for space in the country, and that will include DST, science and technology, communications, Department of Defense, and so on, in accordance with the policy. Okay. The policy that's referred to here is the one that's referred to in Section 2, which is the National Space Policy. And then Section 4 calls for the establishment of the South African Council for Space Affairs, which is essentially a body or a council that's responsible for the determination of the policy, advising the minister around what the policy should look like, and also in terms of regulating this environment in line with the policy that's been crafted and approved. Then Section 5 of the Space Affairs Act talks about the objects and functions of the council, and the primary role of the council is essentially on the implementation of the space policy that's reflected in Section 2 of the Act. And so, as I said, one of the important points that we're looking at in terms of the policy is compliance with international conventions, treaties, and agreements. And so there's a whole list of activities that the council is mandated to do. The first one is to advise the Minister of Trade and Industry around policy issues around the country. And then also hear representations regarding space affairs. Now, in terms of developing policies and strategies, one needs to take account what exists in the landscape, and also to hear representations from the local, the community, or any concerns that arise due to what the council is doing. And then to implement matters relating to international obligations, and I'll come to the international obligations in the next slide. And then there's an issue of issuing licenses. Now, if you're launching a satellite, you need a license to actually launch the satellite. There's something called the convention, the liability convention. So you need to register and license a satellite in terms of, whose responsibility if anything has to go wrong with the satellite, which state is actually responsible. So you have different states that come into play. For example, you have what is called a launching state, state that is actually launching the satellite that's using their rocket. And then, obviously, you know, South Africa is the owner of the satellite.
Okay, I'll come a little bit more forward. Thanks.
Is it? Okay. So, when the satellite is being launched, obviously South Africa has a responsibility if anything goes wrong on the satellite as well. So, you need to get a clear sense of the responsibilities in terms of if anything does happen to go wrong. And then the council is also responsible for, you know, registration of institutions. And because I initially indicated that this is a dual-use technology environment, you need to get a sense of, you know, the different industry players in terms of what they're doing around these specific technologies. So registration of these institutions is key in terms of keeping tabs as to what is happening. And then the council is also responsible for publication of information relating to the activities of the council. As per the PFMA, they're expected to report to Parliament once a year in terms of the activities that they perform. And then, as I said, the primary role of the policy mandate is around looking at our international responsibilities. And there are a number of international conventions, treaties, and agreements. And I'll just run through them very quickly. There's the Outer Space Treaty, which is a very broad framework in terms of how the international players or space countries, faring countries, would operate in this so-called outer space environment. There's the Rescue Agreement, and that talks about, you know, if there's an accident and an astronaut lands in South Africa and he's not a South African astronaut, what the Rescue Agreement calls for is that South Africa will give full support to that rescue attempt and support that astronaut. So we cannot take him prisoner, unfortunately. The Liability Convention, and I spoke around the liability when you're launching satellite or a rocket. I should also add that the Outer Space Treaty has been ratified, but the Liability Convention, we've ratified it and we're actually awaiting the President's signature for the full signature of that convention. The same applies with the Registration Convention. Anything that you put out in space has to be registered. There's a register that's kept in the UN around all of the space objects that have been launched by different states, and so you have to register according to the Registration Convention. Again, we've ratified it, and this has gone through the necessary channels for approval, so we're awaiting the final signature on that as well. And then there's the Moon Agreement, which essentially talks about the preservation of the Moon. When you talk, in fact, if you look at the Outer Space Treaty, it talks about outer space for the preserve of all humankind. So we cannot lay claim to the Moon in terms of, you know, South Africa saying this is our territory now. So there's, essentially it's a free-for-all in that environment. And then any economic benefits that we accrue from expeditions going to the moon is for the benefit of all mankind, not for any specific country. And then as a consequence of us, you know, being responsible for these international obligations, we're also a member of the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. And essentially the way the committee is structured, there are two committees. There's the legal subcommittee, which looks at all the legal implications in terms of operating in the space environment. For example, one of the big issues that are currently being addressed in the legal subcommittee is where does space start and airspace stop? Because remember, when you're launching a rocket, you have to go through airspace into space. So what would happen if a rocket collides with an aircraft? What law applies? Is it airspace law or space law? You need, and that's a big issue, and it's been an issue for many decades now. And we haven't resolved that, essentially. And the other subcommittee is the Science and Technology Committee, and that's essentially looking at, you know, science and technology as a support for the space sector in terms of developing the technologies, innovation, and so on. And then in June every year, there's a main plenary, which is led by the Department of Trade and Industry. That plenary essentially is a kind of a decision-making body. So essentially what are the discussions that take place at the legal and the science and technology subcommittee is actually endorsed and approved at the plenary in June. So that's essentially the way the UN COPIUS actually operates. And then turning our attention to the South African National Space Agency Act, if one has to look at the preamble, that's Act Number 36 of 2008. If you looked at the preamble, you get a sense of what the space agency is supposed to be doing. It's looking at the promotion and the use of space. It's looking at cooperation in space-related activities. It has to focus on fostering research in space science, and then advancing science, scientific engineering through one human capital development, and then also supporting industrial development. Now, if you look very carefully, it's more kind of an implementing function, as opposed to the council, which is more policy and regulation. And put in red, this also appears in the preamble, that all of these activities will be done within the framework of national government policy. So making a link here between the Space Agency Act and the National Space Policy, which comes from the Space Affairs Act. So there's a direct link between implementation, which sits with the Space Agency, and the regulatory function, which sits with the Council. Then Section 2 of the South African National Space Agency Act calls for the establishment of SANSA, the South African National Space Agency. And then Section 3 says that, talks about the national space strategies. So essentially the Minister of Science and Technology has a mandate to determine space strategies. But this must be in line with, in essence, giving effect to the National Space Policy, which comes from the National Space Affairs Act. So if you look at it, you have the policy, which is the high-level framework, in terms of giving guidance as to what would need to happen around the space landscape. And then the space strategy is essentially an implementation framework, which actually hinges from the National Space Policy. And so the objects of the SANSA, the Space Agency, is to promote the peaceful use of space, support industrial development, foster research in space science, advance science, engineering, and technology competencies, and this is around human capital development, and then also around fostering international cooperation. And the, in terms of the policy, there's a key focus. There's a dual focus. One is on international cooperation in space-faring nations, and the other one specifically on the focus on Africa. Then the Section 5 talks about the functions of the agency, and what I've included here in red is essentially linkages back to the policy or references to the policy. So the space agency has to implement any space program that is in line with the policy determined in terms of the Space Affairs Act. It has to advise on the development of strategies and programs, and this is where, you know, in terms of the operationalization of SANSA, you know, once they start implementing the space program, they would have to talk back to the Department of Science and Technology, who is responsible for strategy, to essentially give us a sense of whether the strategy remains relevant or not as they implement. And then to implement any national space strategy that the Minister of Science and Technology may determine, or for that matter, any other minister. For example, the Minister of Communications has a telecommunications strategy, which talks about satellites, telecommunication satellites as well. And then it can also acquire, assimilate, and disseminate space satellite imagery for any organ of state. Now, the reason why this specifically appears here, there are many private sectors institutions that already distribute satellite imagery, but not necessarily to organs of state, but to the private sector. So we wanted to make a distinction between what SANSA is doing is essentially providing the satellite imagery to any organs of state. And the reason why we put that, because in terms of satellite imagery, there are many government departments that actually use satellite imagery. And so we wanted to distinguish between the public and the private sector. And then to establish any program, again, in line with the National Space Policy for enabling technologies, development of space science, applications, and operation. So what I'm trying to do is delineate between the Space Council, which is responsible for this National Space Policy, and the South African National Space Agency, which is essentially responsible for implementing the National Space Strategy. Okay, so it's regulation on the one hand and implementation on the other. Then, in fact, if you look very closely between the policy documents and the strategy, sorry, I should have mentioned that the copies of the National Space Strategy and the National Space Policy up front, and both of these were approved by Cabinet on the 3rd of December 2008. Okay, so you'll see there's a direct linkage between these two documents. But essentially, in terms of the frame of reference, we did mention, in terms of the Space Affairs Act, the Minister of the DTI needs to determine the policy to be followed in the Republic. And this is specifically around the National Space Policy. And this comes from Section 2 of the Space Affairs Act. And then also alluded to Section 3 of the SANDSA Act, which says that the space strategy must hinge from the space policy, must directly link to the space policy. And then if you look very closely at the space strategy, it responds to the DST 10-year innovation plan. As you know, there are five grand challenges that we have chosen, and space science and technology is one of the five grand challenges. So if you look at both the policy and the strategy, what we've included in this table is the policy principles on your left-hand side and the strategy objectives, or the principles on the right-hand side. So for example, if you take improved coordination in the South African space arena, the specific objectives in the National Space Strategy around talking to this particular policy objective is about organizing some of the current space science technology activities into strategic programs. And as you know, this is more promotion and coordination function, because a lot of the historical activities have been happening in the South African landscape, but in a very uncoordinated fashion. So what this particular objective is trying to do is to rearrange some of those activities so that you have strategic programs that emanate from that. And then also optimizing the organization of future space activities, and this is obviously looking forward, where you start to look at strategic programs around activities going forward. And then if you want to facilitate the provision of appropriate and adequate space capabilities as part of the policy objectives, in the implementation side, we're looking at developing services and products that can respond to user needs. Now, in terms of the strategy document, what we actually did was to invite a whole host of government departments around the table. And they essentially gave us a sense of what their user requirements, which are obviously reflective of the national priorities in the country. So the user requirements we're talking about is essentially user requirements across government sectors. And then the specific policy objective is around promoting capacity building. And the strategy objectives that talk to that policy is around strengthening training and technology transfer programs. The policy also calls for to foster a robust science and technology base. And in terms of the strategy, we're saying we're going to promote space science and technology in academic institutions and science centers. Now, a lot of this stuff has already been happening. There's a lot of activities around space awareness in the country, where there's the South African Agency for Science and Technology Advancement would go out to schools and essentially do space awareness in these schools. Then around promoting the development of an appropriate competitive domestic environment, and this is around industrial development, what the strategy aspires to do is to develop the local private space science technology industry sector. Now, one thing I should point out here, specifically around the agency, is that the agency is not going to develop in-house capacity to build satellites. Example. It's going to rely on the industry out there to actually do that function for the space program. So what the agency will do is manage the contracts. So essentially, you have a prime contractor from industry, which is essentially responsible for building the satellite. And obviously, they will subcontract to other maybe small, medium, and micro enterprises, as an example. And then we also want to develop an export market for specific equipment for satellite services. As you know, we have two satellites that we've developed, actually three, one for a foreign country, but two that was launched specifically for South Africa, and that was Sunset and Sumandila Set. And so we have an expertise in the country around satellite manufacturing. And the prime focus there is on micro and medium satellites. So we want to look at capturing a market share in terms of those satellite platforms. We also want to improve cooperation with other nations, and as I said, there's two primary focuses here. The one is on partnerships with established and developing spacefaring countries. We've essentially done an assessment to see where the other countries lie in relation to South Africa. So we know the countries that are ahead of South Africa. We also know the countries that are lagging South Africa. So that also informs our international collaboration strategy. And then we also want to respond to challenges and opportunities in Africa, and we're already starting to do that. For example, we are co-chair of the Group on Earth Observation, and we represent the interests of the developing countries, and specifically for that on the African continent. And then we also want to promote greater awareness and appreciation, and this is around the space awareness, and what the strategy aspires to do is to advocate the importance of space science and technology, and also around building local awareness of space science and technology and its benefits. And then last slide before I turn to my colleague. What is important in terms of what we already sketched out now, as I said, we have the policy and regulation domain, and then also the implementation, which talks about promotion and coordination. And these two actually need to fit together to actually, you know, build up or lend support to the National Space Program. Probably the questions that might come out is, why do you need the separation of these functions? And it's like the, you know, having the police and the Department of Justice kept separate because you want this level of independence. So the police, you know, the South African police is more kind of implementing, and the Department of Justice kind of regulating the whole system. So you need those separation of functions, and that's why the policy and regulation sits with trade and industry, and the implementation actually sits with science and technology. Thanks.
Sorry, thank you, Valentin. Thank you to the committee. I'll take over now from my colleague to actually portray this differences that we are trying to elucidate here today. We have the two wheels. The other one is red, which actually shows the space policy and the regulation environment, which is the environment, which is the DTI's environment. And that policy and regulation environment gives rise to the National Space Policy, which Val has already mentioned that was approved in 2008. We also have the copies of the National Space Policy document in front here for the members. On the other side of the line, we have a black wheel, which gives rise to the space strategy, which is the responsibility of our colleagues from science and technology. And that space strategy gives rise to the implementation of the space program through promotion and coordination. There we see the various, these two institutions playing in those fields, which are interlinked. As he has already mentioned, that whatever the agency is implementing is done according to the guidelines put in the National Space Policy. So on the red side, we see the South African Council for Space Affairs, and then on the other side, the Space Agency. Now, more on the clarification. We are having the two departments at the top there, the DST and the DTI. Then the three three levels there, where we have this in the middle. Let's start in the middle. We've got the Space Agency Board, which is the board of the Space Agency, and on the other side we've got the Space Council, which are linked by that dotted line, which is the responsibility of the DTI. Then from the Space Affairs Council, we've got this regulatory function that he has been talking about, which is operating in this kind of a rectangle here. In the green rectangle, we've got the Space Agency Executive, the CEO, and the staff within the agency. They are operating within the regulatory environment, which is actually regulated by the Space Affairs Council. Below the executive, there are functional programs arising from the space strategy and thematic programs. Now coming to the visions and the missions of these respective bodies. The vision of SAGSA is to create and maintain a regulatory environment that enhances South Africa's domestic and international space activities. So SAGSA, working from the Space Affairs Act, is providing that broad environment so that we can enhance our activities within the country and outside. The mission coming from that goes on like ensuring the safety, reliability, and sustainability of the South African space activities for societal benefit, through policy, regulatory, and industrial. I think the important point that we wanted to make there is the societal benefits. That what we are doing nowadays, as we are resuscitating the space program, we are doing this specifically for socio-economic benefits. such that the various societies can be able to benefit from space through a number of space applications, and which is against, or which is not what probably other countries do as far as space is concerned, where they would use space probably for military operations and other operations. It goes on to talk about development of measures that respond to national and international opportunities, which is linking with the IEC that is coming in October. Here, the strategic objectives for SACSA, it is to support, review, and implement appropriate regulatory policies, practices, and compliance. SACSA will not only be implementing the regulatory policies, but will also ensure that there is compliance to that effect. We will have to fulfill international obligations and responsibilities, promote space activities in a fair and stable regulatory regime, and then we'll also encourage development of a sustainable domestic space industry. There's a need to build stakeholder confidence in space activities. As Val has mentioned, that space activities were done in an uncoordinated fashion in the past. So SACSA is expected to bring together that confidence of space issues within the country. Now coming to SANSA, which is the agency. The vision of SANSA is to be a leading contributor to the perpetual advancement of society through benefits of space science and technology. So there's an emphasis here again of societal benefits or advancement of the society through using space. Because in the past, I think people would think that space, you just want to go to the moon, or it's something that is very abstract, which cannot help us. But the view has now changed that we can actually benefit from space here on Earth. Amongst the mission is delivery of space-related activities, support, guide, and conduct R&D, stimulate interest and develop human capital, nurture space-related partnerships, and grow our contribution into the space value chain. Goals of SANSA is around world-class and efficient services and societal benefits, be involved in cutting-edge research, development, innovation, and technology applications, because this is an area which deals with very, very high technology requirements. That's why also the issue of human capital is key, because you wouldn't be able to develop these high technological innovation applications without the corresponding human capital development. It also speaks to globally competitive space industry, as we have seen that SANSA will support the development of the space industry. And it will make South Africa a globally recognized space citizen. Now coming to a question which was asked by the committee, which I will also talk to generally. Space science by definition includes astronomy, and there's limited astronomy focus within SANSA. We have seen a number of projects that around astronomy, such as the SALT, the Southern African Large Telescope, the Meerkat and SKA mega projects that we are bidding with Australia. These projects have their own governance. But there is a need that we minimize the risk with regard to the SKA bid, and we avoid a defocus from other important areas of space science within SANSA. So SANSA would actually be keen to focus on important areas, whilst they are not forgetting about astronomy, as astronomy has at this stage progressed, as we have seen those mega projects. Specifically on SAIO, which is the South African Astronomical Observatory, that's where our Space Council chairperson is coming from at the moment. There's some history around this. When South Africa was bidding for the IAC, there was a consortium which was formed, including academic institutions, research institutions, and industry, which actually put together the bid for the IAC. And the chairperson happened to be leading that consortium. And he subsequently became appointed as the chairperson in 2010, July. And he was still continuing with the work of the IAC. And we have already been working together as the DDI, as the council, and other government departments as well. So, International Astronautical Congress. Actually, I'm going to go to that now. Let me go to that. International Astronautical Congress is a world premier congress of the space industry and professionals, which South Africa will be hosting from the 3rd to the 7th of October in Cape Town. And this congress will be coming to the African continent for the first time in its 62-year history. What we are doing around preparing for the Congress, we have formed a preparatory committee, which is including a number of government departments. DST is part of that. Foreign Affairs is part of that. Communication is part of the committee. A number of state institutions, they sit in the committee, as well as academics. Academic institutions are represented in the committee. So the DTI is leading that committee, which is working around organization of the IEC. The preparatory committee also has some portfolios. It has four portfolios. It has an academic and research portfolio. It has a awareness and marketing portfolio. There are two other portfolios, but those portfolios, there are distinct departments that are responsible for those portfolios. The IAC is not just a congress, but is accompanied by a large industrial space exhibition that will attract exhibitors from around the world. So the DTI will be very much crucial within this large industrial space. We have already committed to take a large space that will bring together all the South African companies and institutions that are involved in space. With the DST, the DTI will jointly table a cabinet memorandum on the IAC for cabinet to endorse and also understand what is taking place, what is the progress, what is expected of this country in this big Congress. The President has been, I think, will be soon requested to open the IAC. The IAC will be starting on the 3rd, which is a Monday, but the day before the opening of the Congress, there is a Parliamentarian's Day, which will be very much important for all the parliamentarians like yourself, whereby all the parliamentarians from all over the world, they get together and they will be making papers and share experiences and talk about how they could take space forward in their respective countries. The DST, we fortunately have a bilateral with the DST, and the role was clearly defined. They will act as a platinum sponsor and sponsor some exhibition space for themselves, for SANSA, and probably some other big programs like the SKA. The DST is also organizing the geo-related session, because the DG already is chairing the geo session. Africa Day preceding the IEC, and the DST will be preparing the African framework for Africa, which it will be presented on that day. DST is already working on the ARMC. I hope my colleague has talked about that. The African Resource Management Constellation of Satellites, which includes ourselves, Algeria, Nigeria, and Kenya, which is actually a program where all the states that are in that program are expected to send some satellites out there, and then the data that will be collected by satellites will be shared amongst all the member countries of the ARMC. We see some big benefits for this country, for a number of industries, specifically starting from the space and aeronautics industry or the aerospace industry, various other industries that will be assisting with accommodation, hospitality, and so on, will are expected to benefit from this Congress, as it's going to bring all the different countries to South Africa, specifically Cape Town. Thank you very much. I think that's the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I will allow now the members to interact with you, but I should give you my opinion about there are many things that I'm going to ask you. I think you'll be very engaged because there are many things that you have said which are very disturbing. But I'll leave the members to first discuss. They make their interaction. I happen to have been to Prague to this conference also. I'm coming from there.
Okay.
And I am very well aware of what is involved. That's why I'm going to really table a lot of questions. If you can't answer them now, you must go and write back. Okay, I'll allow the members to interact with you. I've got Honorable Shin here. I've got Albert. Albert, yeah. I was with him in practice. We come from there. Yeah. Okay. Honorable Shom. Anybody else? Okay. Honorable member from DTI. I mean, from what shall?
Smile.
Okay. Honorable Smile. Right, in that order, as I've pointed to, let's hear what you have.
Thank you. I understand, and I don't think any of us doubt the benefits of space science for managing our natural resources and disaster management and all that sort of stuff. What I'm not convinced of is that knowing Africa's and South Africa in particular's huge developmental challenges, that we need to invest in a space industry. I'm not convinced that we can provide the, and I have this also from a couple of scientists that I talk with, that a lot of the space imagery that we're going to get is already available, some of it for free. And so I don't see why we actually need to build and launch our own space vehicles. I can understand that we have a lot of technical expertise in developing aeronautical products and systems and services that we can market to everybody else, but I really don't believe that we should be playing catch-up with the rest of the world on having our own space industry. The Americans still manage to drop their satellites into the ocean on launching, and the Indians still blow up their rockets, and they're streets ahead of us. And I think that, you know, Africa's challenges need a different focus. So I'm a bit concerned about that. The other thing that concerns me is a burgeoning bureaucracy around this. While I understand the two functions between the regulatory and the applications, I'm not sure that we actually do need two space agencies, councils, bodies, whatever, boards, whatever you want to call them, to manage this. Why can't we actually manage by one with different responsibilities allocated to the various people in that board? to me, we seem to be wanting to grow regulatory jobs at a huge cost. I mean, Census board is going to grow quite considerably, you know, as it goes along, and can we really afford that? Do we really need it? Are the main things. And also, obviously, Census, we still don't know, but how many people are employed by the Space Council? And its various support services. I think I'll leave it by. Also, the validity of launching our own vehicles, I think I've gone on to that. I know that we want to build on the, should I call it, the legacy of South Africa's nuclear age, not let that technology go to waste. But I don't, I'm not convinced that we actually need it. And has there been a thorough business case done on what South Africa's space industry is actually going to contribute to the economy? And I know that the minister has been going around saying that the images that are being downloaded from some Ventilisat have been given to the users for free. Well, nothing from the government is free. The taxpayers paid for those images. And so, you know, to actually say that, of course, you know, the users are getting it for free is a little disingenuous. Taxpayers are paying for it, and we need to know that, you know, at the moment the images that were downloaded to Kruger Park, we're told, I think she said that they would have cost $80,000 if we'd bought them from the state. Well, so far those images have cost us about 90 million rand. So we need to actually make sure that we're actually getting a fair whack for the money here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I have similar questions. The structure of having two different agencies, or actually two bodies. I would like to know on which examples those were modelled. If you look at the modern versions in first world countries, you have only one agency. America, you have the National Aeronautical Space Agency, NASA. You have the ESA in Europe. I would just like to understand why we do have two separate bodies, why they cannot be joined together. Then on the issuing of licenses, I just want to know whether any licenses have been issued, what type of licenses are available and what have been issued so far, especially launch licenses. Coupled to this also, has there been any research on the economic viability of South Africa's space future and Africa's space future? So, are we embarking on investing in a viable industry, or are we just rehashing the wheel? If we are recreating the wheel, which is not wrong necessarily, we need to know that there's an opportunity for us there in the future. Not just a national strategic opportunity, but also economic opportunity, for the space industry worldwide is commercializing as well. I'm not sure if you can answer this question. On the work of UNCOPWAS, the Moon Agreement wasn't signed by many countries, and it's none of the great spacefaring powers, as far as I know, have signed it. And therefore, it doesn't really have strong status, legal status in the world, except for the few signatories. The reason for that is because of the commercialization of the space industry, and that the idea of the province of mankind, that space is a province of mankind, is sort of passing by, and we're looking at the new Wild West situation where people want to make claims for their own national interest and their own personal interest as well, because many companies are now participating in this as well. What I want to know, if there's any new treaties that's going to try and regulate this commercialization process. On the South African National Space Agency Act, the preamble says that the space agency must advance scientific engineering through human capital development and support of industrial development. I'd just like to know if there's any specifics on that and how that is going to be achieved. On the SANSA Act, you have a last bullet point. State that the establishment of any program in line with the National Space Policy for Enabling Technologies Development of Space Science Application Operations. I just want to know what programs you have in progress at the moment and what is envisaged. And then linking policy and strategy, you state, you facilitate the provision of appropriate and adequate space capabilities. Developing services, the strategy objective is developing services and products that can respond to user needs. And you state that those users are the government actors. Just would like to know what you're going to do about private needs, private industry, because that's where the real growth will be. And just lastly, I'd like to know where we can find out who the current members are of the two bodies. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I believe my other question has been covered by this comrade, because, sorry, by the honourable member behind me.
Hey, welcome, honourable member.
Like him to be well. The criteria or criterion to be used to award licenses, those licenses that were referred to in the presentation. And my other question is that a need to minimize the risks with regard to the sky? Because I would just like to, for interest sake, to know which are those risks that need to be minimized with regard to the SCA or SKA bid. Thanks.
The next member? Oh, it's Mr. Dell.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, let me start in the beginning and not to make it short as possible. The treaties that we have with other countries, I just would like to understand the extent of those treaties. How many countries are involved? Is all our, especially with the new line of treaties that the DTI is following now, BRICS and all those things. I just would like to understand in treaties, are we open to all possible countries, or are there limitations to some of those, because that will answer some of the other issues. You also talk about the improvement of industrial development. I would like to understand from the Department of Trade and Industry and from Science and Technology is are we putting some sort of incentives forward for private investments or for the public sector to maybe enhance this field? And if so, what are those sort of incentives if we do put some sort of incentives forward? You also said that under the vision of SOCSA, the council, that it's more for socio-economic benefits, and that's where the focus are. My question this is then, how much of the technology that we then put forward or establish actually goes into, and the resources of that goes into the other sectors of government, which is maybe then defense or communication? Maybe percentage breakdown so that I can try to understand where the balance of resources are going into. So I just would like to get that. Then we also talked about licenses that does go out, but then we further on says the registration process of those companies. And understanding that is how many of those actual licenses are being registered, and how many have we actually got? And does the Department of Trade and Industry, I would then presume, deals with the registration of those companies through CIPRA? I would I
you at the subject, but I find it very fascinating and exciting. And last year I had the opportunity for the first time to go to the Kennedy Space Center at Cape Canaveral. And I'd like to recommend, Chairperson, that you take all of us in this room here on a visit there, because I think it's very important, okay?
You're going there on the 29th.
Oh, really? I'm in.
Quite honestly,
it was a truly exhilarating experience. I didn't expect it. I went there for my kids, and it was me that really enjoyed it. But the point about that is that the Americans are scaling back enormously on their space program. You know, they've stopped, shuttle? They've stopped that. The last one was on the launch pad that we saw there. And it does beg the question of what are the new areas? Who are the new players? I saw a graph in here about who's spending what on space. And France comes second, but a very, very far away second from the United States. And it would seem to me that China is on the increase in its expenditure and expansion. So for me, it would really be interesting to know, where are these new areas? What are the new frontiers in terms of space? I think Anton was talking about commercial side of things is the new sort of growth area. But I think that's very interesting from our point of view, because that leads me to my second point, which is I think it's very important that we identify, first of all, where the new growth areas are and found our niche in that regard, and then promote ourselves in whatever niche we have. Because I think the SKA and the SALT and so on are all examples of the technology that's already been developed here through the unique circumstances that South Africa finds itself in. And I would like to see us give more emphasis, less, I agree with the other colleague here, less on the regulation and policy and more on the science and the development of scientists and science. And I think it could be extremely exciting for us to find ourselves as a small player, but a player in that kind of development. And, you know, almost like downstream industries. I also quickly glanced at this, and some of your key priority areas are Earth observation, but navigation issues and so on. I think that's very important, because I think we're strategically placed with a very dry and open country, but also our position at the southern tip of the continent. The other thing that I think is very encouraging is the Congress that it's coming here. I don't know, Chairperson, if you were responsible for bringing it here, but if you were, congratulations. And I'm sure the minister had a role as well. But I think it is very exciting, and I think that we should congratulate ourselves on having this conference here. I think it will put a whole new excitement into all the other work that's been done here. And so I think that's a very encouraging. So those are my few very backward remarks on this matter. Thank you.
Well, if you were in Prague, you'd have enjoyed more than nothing. That's where you would have seen the value of this Congress, what it is all about. And that is where I have many questions in the way things are organized here in South Africa. The first thing, I think it's my turn now. I want to just make one example of the Department of Communication. The Department of Communication has got a regulatory authority, ICASA. It does not need to be in trade and industry. It's there under the department, well, an independent, but looking in the affairs of the department. And there is nowhere in the Constitution that it says it, the regulation must only turn in the trading industry, for instance. Actually, if I listen as a person who come from the science background, I see so many disjunctures in the activities which they call regulatory, because some of them, let me give you one example that I quoted, cutting-edge research, development, and innovation. That's not an area of policymaking. It's an area of research and development, which falls directly under the Department of Science and Technology by mandate. It can't be under trade and industry. You see, I'm just, there were many of them that I picked up there. You know, if I pick up even that the chair of the speech council comes from the Department of Science and Technology, yet it's regulated in the trade and industry, because the chair comes from astronomy, which is governed by NRF under the Department of Science and Technology. You know, there are so many disjunctures. When we arrived in Prague, many people thought that it was the Department of Science and Technology which was responsible. The speaker here refused permission initially to the trade and industry people that why are you discussing, why are you organizing space thing, why science and technology? What is it doing? Why is it too organizing a space, an international space conference? You know? And actually, if you were there, that's why I see a lot of despair, because they are talking real top science. It's top science. The industries that are involved there, actually one of the people from United Nations, we spend a lot of time with, who was talking about the disaster management, how much the technology has been developed but put aside for commercialization than for human benefit. Yeah, I think you remember him, the guy from United Nations. So there's actually, if I look at it myself, initially, climate change and space exploration, they are almost at similar level. They involve a lot of departments, but you need to have a lead department and have all other departments correctly. For instance, climate change here is led by the Department of Environment and Water Affairs, but it involves a lot of other departments, but we've given it a correct lead so that there are no disjunctions. Space exploration is supposed, most of it is about very, very rocket science. You see, SKA, it's all about top rate astronomy. You see, and I can't imagine how a Department of Trade and Industry would be able to really articulate the position that could be articulated to the Astronautical Congress in terms of SKA project or in terms of SALT. I just can't see how it can. In fact, until now, the president was announcing, making a very public speech, how many important conference, international conference that we are going to have here, and he didn't talk about this, which is the one top, because things have not been properly communicated. If I go further. Honorable Shin said, why there are these two bodies? Indeed, why? Because we need first to locate the department, which is going to be the lead department, because there is a lot of space activity. We know them from Prague and from South Korea, there, because we were invited also in South Korea in the previous year. Agriculture, actually space defense systems. We are controlled by the world because they've developed space technology. All the space agencies of China, of India, of Europe, they control everything. Actually, if I can tell you, at 10,000 kilometers in the last time that I know, they had satellite systems that were able to see a tennis ball here. Into space, I'm not talking 10,000, like beyond into space, they were able to see everything that moves here, which is what they did in Iraq. They were able to see anything there and just hit it from a satellite technology. And with all the satellite technology, actually I can tell myself why I think I disagree with many things, the way this thing has been coordinated. You know, I think that's the question that came from Honorable Van der Merwe. You see, this juncture happened because we did not have the Department of Science and when an amendment was made to transfer it back to science and technology. And I do not know, but I was, have always been assuming that probably that is why the Space Council still remained there. I do not know. But you can see that even the head of Space Council still belongs to the Department of Science and Technology. That's where the competency is, to really run the affairs, as far as I'm concerned. I've got a number of... that's why I said I want to hear maybe, because there is an act of parliament, I think of 2008, that you say it was approved by the cabinet. But you see, it depends how things were presented in the cabinet. Because if you present us to us convincingly, then we can also say yeah, it's right. But I've discussed with some ministers who also feel that things need to be revisited, but not for this year, because this year it's late to do all that. But we need to really revisit how things are done, how things are coordinated, because to me, this Astronautical Congress, it's got also a component of parliamentarians, the Astronautical Federation, which is very important for us as parliamentarians. And we need to showcase really the coming for the first time of such a Congress to Africa. That's how I feel. And we need to really be on top of everything. Actually, if already by now they've already closed for the papers that are supposed to be presented, and there are 30 of them, all top space science, all top. They have given topics about 8 of them. They are all top science. They have nothing about control as such. They've got about science and technology development. You see, so. That's why I'm saying all what you've said there to me, it's problematic a bit. It's very, very problematic. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the members for all the questions and the comments. I think they will help us going forward. But I want to start by explaining to the chairperson about the presentation itself, where you see disjunctures. We have actually not presented according to our duties with my colleague here. If you can see earlier on, he presented on SAXA and the policy which sits with us. We have not presented according to this is what I'm doing. But we just divided the presentation somewhere in the middle, which probably has caused a problem for the members. So I can see the chairperson very passionate about cutting edge research and science. That all that slide that I talked to is not my responsibility from the DTI, but because we have developed the presentation together, then we decided that we cut it at this area, and then the other person continues. So, if I can explain further on that, our responsibility as the DTI is around the National Space Policy and the SAXA, and we are not involved in research and development. That is the mandate of the DST. But we work very well together, that we understand their issues, they understand our issues. And that is why we have also managed to present on our respective areas here today. I hope that will clear the disjuncture part of it. But before we came here, Chairperson, we were talking to each other that our presentation has focused mainly on the distinction between SANSA and SAXA. And we've touched briefly on the IEC, and I see your concerns. We even mentioned that we will have to come back on the IEC with a bigger delegation, which is including the LOC and everybody else that is part of this. But I must say there is a coordinating body, which I have mentioned to be the PREPCOM, which is bringing everybody together. But we can still take some suggestions and guidelines from yourselves on how to better organize for the Congress.
That is why, actually, I just made a very good example in terms of exactly type of what we are talking about, but we, you know, from the principles of the workings of government, we've located it somewhere so that everybody knows wherever or wherever he or she comes from, that central to this is driven by this government section or department, which is in that, in this situation, the Department of Environment. But there are a lot of things in climate that involve science and technology, that involve energy, that involve rural development, everything else. That is why I'm simply saying that things are not very well located or coordinated, and I foresee a situation which, you know, a lot of what you have talked about in both your presentation, actually what you are even justifying now, you had put policy and objectives in terms of strategy. So what I was picking up, for instance, space activities, the building stakeholder confidence, those were from your policy control strategy, what the objectives. So that is why I said, I see a lot of disjuncture in everything, because when we invited you here, we invited you to say what you do in your science and technology and what you do in DTI. We wanted to see the gap. Why is the disjuncture? Why is there not a common body with maybe a regulatory mechanism inside that body? And we even had already discussed with some senior executive members that why is there any obstruction by constitution or whatever to have a regulatory mechanism coming from the science and technology? Because this is a top science thing, actually. If you look at using space for anything, it's about science. It's about science first. Industry, even industry that deals with space, it starts from science and then it develops to industrial commercialization. But it's science. Space is just science, whether you like it or not. So we've got the Science Application Center there. Actually, I have discussed with people from CSIRO Science Application Center. They have told me the problem that they have even about developing this, because it's a problem of control, that it may be controlled where people are not very understanding of what those people need. You see, and that's my feeling. I'm not saying it's like that. But they have told me that in terms of themselves developing to the level which would benefit Africa, there is a lot of problem about approval of budgets, about things that they want to develop, you see. To me, I feel that it's because when they send application there, they are not probably well accepted or understood. I do not know, you know. But they have complained. They have said that we must, as Parliament, intervene and try and support them, you know. And that's all that I'm saying. Yes.
I can see you're very passionate about your subject and your committee. Would you allow, because there were certain questions raised by honourable members sitting here, and I didn't hear the... haven't responded to those actual questions. Would you allow them to actually respond to those questions and then allow for a opportunity then after that for further, if you would like from your side itself, then to go further on? But I would really request a response from this. So thank you.
No, they will respond. We have got enough time. This is part of my question. That's why I said I'll leave every part of you so that I'm able to cover my position. They can answer it, they cannot answer it, but this is how I feel. But we have enough time for them to at least to respond to you. You can respond.
Thanks, Chair. What I propose to do is then work our way, as we've done last week, through all the questions, and then I think at the end we'll address your particular question as well. I think the first question was around, there's not a convincing motivation around why we need a space industry. And I think there was particular reference to the launch capabilities. If I talk about satellites specifically and why we need satellites, there's a number of reasons. The first one, obviously, is we pay quite a large amount of money for access to satellite imagery, and that is actually license with a foreign service provider. The first one is that it's very difficult to get high-resolution satellite imagery. And when you talk about high resolution, that is what we call sub 1 meter. That means when you can start looking at differentiating between the cars on the street using satellite imagery. The medium and lower resolution satellite imagery is essentially being made free of charge. For example, 10 meter resolution satellite imagery. We get it free of charge from Brazil and China, the CBAR satellite is an example. If you go 25 meters and above, Landsat, the American satellites provide that free of charge. But when you get down to spatial planning where you need 2.5 and sub 1 meter resolution, that's very expensive. In fact, when we talk about sub 1 meter, we're actually talking about military applications where the Defense Force actually requires those satellites to do planning around how they plan around the troops and so on. So the high resolution satellite imagery still poses a problem in terms of access, and obviously there's a high cost if you can get to it. The second issue is around having your own satellite is if you have a disaster, if you're reliant on a foreign service provider to actually give you the imagery you want, they have to task the satellite to point where you want it to point, where the disaster is actually happening. And that's very difficult to do. The turnaround time for that to happen with a foreign service provider is about -2 to 3 weeks to actually get a satellite imagery. If you have your own satellite, you can task your satellite to do exactly what you want. So having full autonomy in terms of your own satellites is quite important. The other issue around having your own satellites is, and I think I alluded to this point, is around developing the sub 1 meter capability. In fact, at the moment, if you look at Sumandila, we have a 6.25 meter ground resolution. They claim, the foreign satellite that was procured from abroad, for which there's a non-disclosure agreement, was a sub 1 meter resolution satellite. So we do have the capability in the country to develop the satellite. But what we need to be mindful of is we're not focusing on larger satellite systems. We're focusing on micro, nano satellites. So Modulasat was an 80-kilogram satellite. If you look at the American satellites, you're looking at a few tons, as an example. So we're looking at a much more cost-effective solution. For example, the Nigerian satellite that was launched by China, it's a communication satellite, cost them $250 million. Take that. Okay, so Modulasat is not in the same class. But if we had to develop that, it would probably cost us half of that, if not less. And that's because we are operating in a much smaller satellite system. It's much more cost-effective. The launch capability specifically, if you look at the strategy, there's no reference to launch capabilities. Because when we crafted the strategy, we did not have any intentions of looking at the launch capabilities. The primary reason for that was that we knew it was capital-intensive, that we had to plow a lot of resources to resuscitate the launch capabilities. But then the question one had to beg was that, the way the space environment is moving, and if you look at what's happening in terms of economic benefits that you accrue from the space industry, Japan has already done this. They've sent probes to some of the asteroids, and they've actually found mineral resources in those asteroids. So if going forward, if there's a huge economic benefit in terms of mining asteroids, for example, mining the moon, whatever the case may be, how long will it take us to get to that point if we don't have launch vehicles in place, as an example? We have a 5-year window. We did have a launch program, and South Africa did 3 suborbital tests where we've actually put the launches into suborbital or suborbit. So those tests have been successful. So the capability in terms of developing launch capability actually exists in the country. But we have a 5-year window, because if we don't utilize that human capital, we will actually lose it. So, which means that we have to build a space launch capability, say 10 years from now, we would have to start from scratch. Whereas at the moment, we do have human capital or the expertise to do that. And I think that's what we're trying to do. And by the way, this is not a done deal in terms of us saying, yes, we want launch capabilities. There is a core team that's been put together to actually assess whether there's any feasibility in terms of both the market and the strategic value in terms of investing in this particular capability. So we're not saying this is definitely the way we're going to be proceeding. So that is certainly a study that's ongoing. The other question?
Yes.
why we need two separate bodies, and I think it also touches on your last point. This is a difficult one, to be quite honest, and in fact our political principles, and I think even cabinet has reflected on this issue, and to be quite honest, they have the same views as you're expressing here today. And I think there's a lot of historical linkages in terms of the way we are structured. As you know, I think I made the point that when we were looking at the Space Affairs Act and specifically the space policy, the question one needs to ask is what was the policy drivers for the space landscape in 1993? And if you had to reflect on that, it's very different from what it is now. At that point in time, it was on dual-use technology and the control of technology because we wanted to get our foot into the missile technology control regime. And we had to demonstrate to the rest of the world that we were serious about this. And so that's where the Non-Proliferation Act came into play and the Space Affairs Act came into play. In fact, the Space Affairs Act is Act 84. It's 84 of 93. And the Non-Proliferation Act is Act 86 of 93. So they're published at the same time. And if you look at the acts themselves, you'll see that they're drafted by the same group of people. So space was looked through a non-proliferation lens at that point in time. And there is, under the current council, one of the initiatives is around looking at the Space Affairs Act and whether it remains relevant in the current context. So I think the question that you're probably asking will probably be addressed in that manner. And I think what we're presenting here is more stemming from the legislative mandate as they exist, status quo, as opposed to what they should be. So I think in terms of how we move forward, the council will be looking at reviewing the act, and maybe a new institutional arrangement might crop up. We're not sure in terms of how that will pan out. So I think the concerns you're raising will be addressed going forward. I think there was an issue around as to whether the SumanitoSat data is free of charge. Absolutely right. It's not free of charge. It has cost the taxpayer money. But I think what we're saying is that to make it accessible to government departments, they don't have to pay for it. Okay? But that's not necessarily equates to being free of charge. You're right. Yes, there's a cost in terms of accessing and distributing the data, definitely. But it's much cheaper than having to buy an 80 million rand license for a spot data, as an example. The other thing I need to point out about SumanitoSat specifically, it's not meant to be a full, what we call a full flight model, okay, a satellite. It's meant to be a technology demonstrator to get us back on the path in terms of developing satellites. So there will be limitations on SumanitoSat. For example, the problems that we've experienced now, and I think there's questions raised around that. The reason why SumanitoSat is cheap, the satellite itself is about 26 million rand. But if you put the ground segments and put all that cost into it, it's much more. But the satellite, in terms of the cost of the satellite, is cheap because most of the satellites that are currently out in space at the moment have what we call dual redundancy, meaning that if for each pod there's two of them, so that if one fails, there's a backup system. So SumanitoSat doesn't have that. In fact, there's a single line. So if there's a failure, and if it's in a critical path, then the satellite is gone. Fortunately, a lot of the failures have not been on the critical path. So the satellite still functions. It might be limping. But in fact, there's some... No, it's not a flying turkey either. Now, if I can explain what the current situation, and maybe this is important, there is a problem on the stabilization of the satellite, okay, which means that, you know, you have to understand how a satellite operates. If this is the Earth, essentially when you launch the satellite, it keeps falling towards the Earth but not quite reaching, so it goes around in an orbit. But to take satellite imagery, the satellite has to be pointing towards the Earth all the time. And if you put something in space and if you don't control it, it tends to tumble. And you don't want that, so you want the satellite to remain stable as possible so it points towards the Earth as it is an orbit. Now, we have lost reaction wheels, and the way you stabilize it is that the satellite is tumbling in one direction. There's reaction wheels that spin the other direction that pull the satellite in the right direction, and you have three sets of these wheels. So we call this three-axis stabilization. There's a wheel in the X, Y, and the Z. So what has essentially happened in SumanitoSat, the Z reaction wheel has packed up. It's tumbling in the Z direction. But what the engineers have done is they've coupled the X and the Y in such a way that they start to compensate for the Z direction. So the satellite tumbles, But as it comes over the point where it wants to take the image, they slow the tumbling down. It takes an image, it tumbles, it takes an image, and then it carries on tumbling. As it comes back, they slow the tumbling down. And that's, by the way, the first time it's ever been done. So it's very innovative. So we are getting 2 images per day at the moment. In terms of on which examples were the sands and the Saxon model have been modeled after, you talked about NASA and ESA. By the way, if you look at the discussions we've been having in the international arena, a lot of the colleagues that operate in the space environment will tell you what we're doing here is very progressive in terms of being very unique in the way we're doing things. That's notwithstanding the institutional arrangements. You know, we have a policy and regulatory instruments. We have an implementation instrument. The question is as to whether they should belong together or separated. But in terms of the legislative mandate, I think we're far ahead of many countries, including developed countries. Just to indicate with, for example, NASA and ESA. NASA is more an implementing body, but there are policy regulations. They do have Earth observation policies, an example. Not specifically space policy in general, but specific policies around Earth observation, as an example. The same applies to ESA. But in terms of the regulatory context, they also have regulatory instruments in place. For example, the ITAR regulation, the International Trade and Arms Regulation, severely controls satellite technology as well. Okay, so there are regulatory bodies that look after the satellite industry. In fact, in South Africa, it used to be one and the same. The Non-Proliferation Council and the Space Council was chaired by the same person. It used to sit in the same place in the DTI, but subsequently it was separated and put in different places. The question is whether this should be collapsed and put in the same place. Well, that's under debate, as I said. Have any licenses been issued? As far as I can recall, and you might want to correct me, a license was issued for Sunset. A license was issued for Mandela Sat. The only launch license I know that was, it was for a UK company that wanted to do an amateur space launch, which never happened. It was sponsored by Gillette at the time. I think it was around about 2003, 2004. Those are the only 3 licenses I know that have been issued by the Space Council. Okay. In terms of, has there been any research on South Africa's space future? Just in terms of Sunset, when Sunset was launched, the economic returns in terms of exports that came out of that was 6 to 1. For every rand that we invested, we got 6 rand back for the Sunset program. And in fact, a lot of those technologies still fly on foreign satellites. For example, the South Koreans have a satellite, an imager that's manufactured in South Africa. Most of the satellites have magnetometers that are manufactured here in South Africa because we have a skills base set at Manus, for example, in terms of magnetometers that is second to none. In fact, it's won many awards, international awards. So a lot of the technology that we've developed as part of the initial program, Sunset, and now leading to Sunspace, so Mandela said, have found export markets. In fact, the reaction wheels that we're talking have flown in Brazilian satellites, as an example. So there is economic benefits in terms of economic returns, but I think if you look at the strategy very carefully, the prime focus is not only on the economic returns, it's also looking at the public goods perspective that accrue from that. Because in terms of the current administration, the focus is on service delivery, and we acknowledge that space can make a meaningful contribution. If you look at the health sector, telehealth, as an example, requires telecommunication satellites to do that. If you talk about tele-education, you require telecommunication satellite to do that. So in terms of the basic infrastructure, you need space. If you're drawing money out of an ATM, the time coding for the transaction comes from a GPS satellite. If you're using GPS on the road, it comes from navigation satellite. So a lot of the technologies we're actually using now, even your cell phones, rely on satellite technology, as an example. If you're watching the Cricket World Cup, it comes via the satellite communication satellite, as an example. Just in terms of the way we segment the various industries, in terms of space applications, and this is globally, and I think it's in the strategy, about 55% of the income comes from space applications, and that includes Earth observation, telecommunications, and so on. The launch industry accounts for only about 3% of the global space market. The ground segments in terms of supporting the satellites accounts for about 23-25%. So that's essentially roughly how the global satellite market is segmented. Work within the UN COPIUS, and the specific question was around the Moon Agreement and the fact that not many countries have, I don't know if you want to handle that one.
Regarding the UN COPIUS and the fact that the treaty, the Moon Treaty, has not been signed by many countries. Most countries have not seen it necessary for them to actually sign the treaty. South Africa is also not party to that treaty. South Africa has only signed the Outer Space Treaty, which is a broader treaty that is governing all the activities within the space arena, as well as has ratified the Registration Convention and the Liability Convention. The Registration Convention talks to setting up a national registry where all the space assets will be registered. I don't know whether I must go to that one because somebody asked about the national registry or the CPRO. And then probably since we are on that one, we can talk about it. The space assets are not registered on CPRO, but on a national registry, which is also sitting within the DTI under the council. Because of the dual-use technologies, there's a need for a very much compliance and monitoring of such assets. So they wouldn't want to be diluted or lost within a very range of big companies that are registered under CITRO, because they have to be monitored over time. And there must be compliance regarding the conditions that have been put when the license have been issued. Because issuing the license and the registration, they go together. There are conditions that have to be met, and the one member has asked about those conditions as well, about what is the criterion for issuing a license. There are a number of conditions, if I may quickly go to that, that have to be met. It has to be, they have to make sure that the license or the satellite will not infringe the safety of the persons or the property. It also has to talk to the protection of the environment. Will the environment not be at risk as a result of this? It also has to look at the issue of space debris mitigation. There's a lot of debris nowadays as a result of collisions of various assets out there. Then the specific asset or satellite has to meet the space debris mitigation guidelines. In addition to that, issue of financial security, whether the company or the institution that is launching the satellite, whether it has financial security, so that it can be able to monitor and control, as Dr. Mansami has mentioned. I'll stop there. I'll come back to the others.
Okay. Just coming back to the Moon Agreement, if you look at the Outer Space Treaty, one of the things it calls for is space for the province of all mankind. And central to that discussion is the issue around sovereignty. And obviously, very similar to the Antarctic Treaty that we have, no country can claim sovereignty over the Antarctic. Okay, and so many countries have signed bases on the Antarctica, but no country can claim sovereignty. And I think the same principle applies in terms of outer space. And I think this issue creeps up. In fact, Libya was the one who raised an objection. And this distinction between air law and space law. Sovereign space includes air law, but not space law. And Libya wanted to extend that into space as well. And this was the early 60s or 70s, essentially. And so this is where there's a big fight around where does air law stop and space law start? And who has sovereignty over this? And so the same applies around the Moon Agreement. You might have heard about 3 or 4 years ago, somebody was selling deeds where you can buy a deed for a property on the moon. So you can have a deed. And so in terms of that agreement, that was not allowed. But one has to contest it because not many countries have signed that agreement either. Okay. The SANSA Act refers to human capital development and industrial development. There was a around that. In fact, and this is probably pre the Sansa era, if you look at Sunset, there were 76 postgraduates. It was actually a postgraduate program. There were 76 masters and PhD students that came out of that program. And with Mandela set, there was also postgraduate students involved from Stellenbosch University. But specifically from the DST, we had requested that 9 black engineers be trained. So essentially when they were developing and building Mandela set, there was a mock-up of Mandela set that was being built where the 9 black engineers were working. In fact, 2 of those engineers, the one guy is the chief engineer who went to Moscow to actually integrate the satellite onto the launch vehicle. He was the chief integration specialist. Another of the black engineer was the chief ground segment specialist, and she was working on the ground segment as an example. What we're doing nowadays is we have a program with the CPUT, the Cape Peninsula University of Technology, on what is called a CubeSat program. So we're actually looking at an undergraduate honors master's kind of level. And this is part of the ESOTI, so the French South African Trade in Innovation Initiative. So it's a dual kind of dual degree where you get a master's degree in South Africa and a master's degree in France, as an example, because part of the studies is done in France as well. But essentially, a CubeSat is a little 10 by 10 by 10 cube, a centimeter cube, and it's a modular infrastructure. It costs about $10,000 to get a full satellite, and then you plug and play and you experiment in terms of, you know, hardware and so on. So we've got about 32 postgraduate students, masters, and 1 PhD on the CubeSat program as an example. And we're currently funding that through the DST. And obviously as these students graduate, we want to see them move into the bigger satellite systems. So we're trying to grow our own timber at the moment in terms of the satellite engineer. In terms of applications, there's a lot of work that has been done. In fact, in the last 2 years, we've put out about 17 million rand worth of funding for bursaries and scholarships, just on the space application side. In fact, we've just concluded a human capital development audit in terms of who's doing what in the South African context. And we're doing a gap analysis in terms of what's required to bring us up to international standards and also taking cognizance of our user requirements as well. So that's what's being done in the human capital development side. And then on the industrial development side, the DTI is working on industrial development framework. I don't know if you want to mention that.
We are at the moment, as Val mentioned, we are developing an industrial development framework strategy, which is expected to provide us guidelines in terms of also the niche areas that one of our members talked to. But as of now, we are aware that we have a niche in small satellite manufacturing. But we'd like to see what other subsystems are we very good into that can fit into that. Because we are aware that one important justification for developing the space industry is that the space industry has spin-offs in other highly technological sectors. So if we are saying that we want to diversify our economy from traditional natural resource-based into knowledge economy, so these are the sectors that we need to develop. The spin-offs are seen in electronics, in ICT, in aeronautics, in a range of other industries. So developing just one industry, as in space, can see a filtration or multiplier in other industries. There was a question around the incentives for the private sector that talked to industrial development. Already within the DTI, we've got a range of incentives for the private sector. We've got a program called the IEC, Aerospace Industry Support Initiative, which is based within the CSIR at the moment. CSIR is project managing the project for us. That project is assisting both aeronautics and space industry. Last year, for instance, we took a number of industries to Prague under the IEC umbrella. We took some to Korea the previous year. And when there are a number of pavilions, we help them through the IEC. But we are not only, IEC is not only involved in exhibitions and exposure, which is quite critical for highly technological industries because they cannot work alone in isolation in South Africa. But there are other development programs to actually help them to be competitive to the international world. For instance,
the area of space is very strong on safety, regulatory, accreditation and certification issues. And if you are not up to scratch as an industry there, you will not be able to participate in that. So IEC helps small, medium and bigger industries to be able to compete in this in this industry. So we have IEC, as I've said, we've got the MIP, which is called the Manufacturing Incentive Program, which we're administering within the DTI, which is assisting all industries that are in the manufacturing industry, including space. Recently, we are finalizing now a program called the ICAP, Industrial Competitiveness Upgrading Program. The ICAP will be looking at upgrading the machinery and the high technologies of the industry, which I've mentioned that they have to be at a level that is competitive to the international world. It will also have an energy efficient component. For instance, if your equipment that you have installed can be energy saving, can switch itself or switching itself off and on and off as and when required, then those will be the credits towards getting that incentive. We've got a range of others, but these three are the ones that specifically I can mention that are working within the aerospace or in the space industry. Thank you.
I can continue, Chair. There was a question around what are we going to do to address the private needs, because I think when I spoke about the space strategy, I alluded to the fact that what's embedded in the strategy was the user requirements across government sectors. That's not to say we're ignoring the private sector. In fact, the implementation plan, which stems from that, talks about three types of services and products. The one is what we call core goods and services, and that's essentially addressing the government's needs. The other was around what we call public goods and services, so like tele-education, telemedicine, you know, addressing service delivery. And then the third one was a commercial goods and services, and that's providing satellite imagery, access to some of the satellite sensors, you know, with each other, navigation and positioning. And that is mainly for the private sector so that they can, you know, make an economic rent from that as well. So the private sector is being addressed. In fact, in line with the industrial development framework, as I said, the SANDA is not going to be implementing these programs. It's there to oversee the overall architecture of the space industry. So the industry players will have to do a lot of the work. The criteria for the licenses, I think that issue has already been addressed. There was a question around the need to minimize the risk for the SKA, but and clarification on that. What we were essentially saying in that particular slide was that, you know, the astronomy does not feature in SANSA, the National Space Agency, at the moment, purely because that, yeah, if you look at the Southern African Large Telescope, the Meerkat, and now the SKA, there's governance structures that have been put in place to look after those particular programs. And what we didn't want to do is to take over, for example, the SKA into the Space Agency at a time when we are bidding for the agency and look for a completely different governance structure, which could be a risk factor for us in terms of bidding for the SKA. So that's why we kept those separate and let them run in terms of the existing governance structure. One might have to look 5-10 years down the line as to whether one needs to absorb that into the Space Agency. But right now it will pose a risk if you take them over into the... especially when the Space Agency is starting up and, you know, is getting finding its feet, and to take on these huge projects might be a bit of a challenge for them as well. The membership of the two bodies, we probably need to provide a list. There's 12-15 members in either of these, the council and the space agency. So maybe there's an action point. We'll provide those lists going forward. Treaties that we have signed with other countries like BRICS and IPSA, and whether that will begin to play out in terms of our space program. In fact, on the IPSA framework, we already, and I think this came out from the discussion of the Ministers of Foreign Affairs under the IPSA framework, and the point that was made there whether we should have a common IPSA satellite. And there's a lot of work that has been done. The unfortunate thing can just explain this. It's looking at what is called the South Atlantic Anomaly. So between Southern Africa and South America, there's a region in the Earth's magnetic field where there's a weakness in the Earth's magnetic field. And you need to understand what the purpose of the Earth's magnetic field. It actually protects us from the radiation that's coming from the sun. If we had no magnetic field, we probably would have been fried by now, long ago. So the Earth's magnetic field actually protects us from the excessive radiation that's coming from the sun. Now, because you have a weak spot between South Africa and South America, there's excessive radiation that comes through in that hole, which is called the South Atlantic Anomaly. And the unfortunate effect is that a lot of satellites that go through the region get radiated, and we actually lose those satellites. In fact, one of the problems with Sumandila Sat is we lost, luckily we had two batteries on it, but we lost one of the batteries because it was radiated while going through this region. And, you know, there's a lot of insurance claims for satellites that come through because satellites that go through the region get lost in that region. So what are we trying to do in terms of space weather, that's trying to understand the terrestrial environment, is trying to understand this region. And so it's quite important for Brazil more so than ourselves because specifically in Brazil, you can't do navigation and positioning. You can't use a GPS, as an example, to the extent that we can, because there's a lot of radiation and interference that comes through because the satellite is sending a signal down and these signals get degraded because they're coming through this weakened spot. So for Brazil, this is quite a pressing issue. And also from South Africa, one of the things that we recognize is that the Earth's magnetic field changes from time to time. You know, the North Pole becomes the South Pole, and the South Pole becomes the North Pole. And this takes a few hundred thousand years to do, to actually change over. And we recognize that this change is long overdue. What actually happens during the change, the Earth's magnetic field begins to weaken in certain spots. In fact, there's evidence it's weakening here in South Africa, right in Cape Town. There's indication that it's starting to flip. And you'll see excessive radiation coming in. You might see excessive increases in risk of cancer and all that kind of diseases, risk of radiation. So we're trying to understand those kinds of environments, unfortunately. So we're doing that in the IFSA framework. The BRICS is quite important. It looks at Brazil, Russia, India, China, and then South Africa. We have relationships with Brazil, Russia. We also want to strengthen relationships with China at the moment. So I think the BRICS gives us an even broader framework in which to work on. The vision of SACSA, I think you addressed the socioeconomic benefits that you were alluding to, the SIPRA registration. There's also a point made around the fact that the Americans are scaling back on the space program. Now, one needs to look at the policy drivers again. What drove the American space industry and the Russian space industry versus the South African space industry? With the Russians and the Americans, obviously, it was about technology supremacy, showing off to each other that they are better at doing what they do. And so the focus was not on Earth observation initially. It was on getting to the moon, going to Mars, as an example. Creating defense systems and so on. And obviously they realize that this is an expensive exercise. The International Space Station is very, very expensive. I know the Chinese are also looking at this. In fact, they're starting to put a similar system in place. So they want to show the Americans and the Russians off. So they're showing their own technical supremacy in a way. The policy drivers in developing countries is very much different from what drives the NASA's and the ESA's of this world. We recognize benefit in terms of Earth observation, in terms of telecommunication, in terms of navigation and positioning, in terms of some of the space science initiatives that I mentioned in terms of understanding the Earth's magnetic field as an example. Those are the kinds of things we want to focus, which have a challenge in terms of our own environment, in terms of our own community, and in terms of improving service delivery. So the focus in terms of the American space program and where we are today is very different. We are looking at leveraging space science for the benefit of our local communities, whereas NASA is very outlooking. How can we get to Mars, as an example? That's not in our horizon, unfortunately. What are the new areas of growth? And as I said, Earth observation is quite a critical one. And you'll see a large focus in the strategy around Earth observation, communications, navigation. navigation and positioning. Now, when it comes to navigation and positioning, we're not in the game of putting a new constellation of satellites. I mean, the GPS satellites, you have a constellation of 24 satellites. In fact, in Russia, they tried to complete the constellation in December, and three of the satellites blew up on the launch pad, and somebody's being fired because of that, unfortunately. But the point what I'm trying to make is around navigation and positioning. We're not trying to duplicate what's out there. We're not playing catch-up. But what we're doing is taking the existing systems and trying to better them. For example, if you want to land an aircraft, you need an accuracy of sub 1 meter. You need to know where you are within a 1 meter scale. With the current GPS, you have an area of about 5 to 10 meters, depending on where the satellites are sitting. You could be off the tarmac if you're landing an aircraft using current GPS. So what we talk about is augmentation systems, where you use existing satellite infrastructure. You put augmentation payloads both on the satellite and the ground, and you increase the accuracy to within, less than a meter. So then you can start landing aircrafts, locating ships within a few meters, as an example. So those are the kinds of new focus areas. We look at new applications as to using existing satellites. More focus on the science and less on the policy. I think from the where we're sitting in science and technology, that's essentially where we're focusing on. Policy and regulations, that's what TTI. So our prime focus is on research, development, and innovation in this particular sector. I think the downstream industries, in terms of where we want to take ourselves and how we position ourselves in the southern tip of Africa, one of the discussions we've been having as part of the RMC, as an example, we've had a discussion with the Algerians. Now, as I said, my colleague had alluded to the African Resource Management Constellation, where each of these four countries will put a satellite in the constellation. Now, essentially what a constellation is, when a satellite takes imagery, there's two things you have to take into account. What is called spatial resolution, in terms of whether it's a sub 1 meter, 2.5, or whatever. And then the other one is a temporal resolution. That means how many times in a day can you take satellite imagery. So the more satellites you have going over this particular region and taking imagery, the higher the temporal resolution, the more images you get of the same region. So if you put four satellites in a constellation in a particular orbit that's going over the African continent, okay, you're going to get a set of 8 images, 2 for each satellite per day, as an example. Okay, so your temporal resolution increases, and that's why we're coming together as an African continent, in terms of putting this constellation that look at the higher temporal resolution. And so, for example, Nigeria is launching their satellite, NigeriaSat-2. They're supposed to do it in the first half of this year. But they will provide that satellite imagery free of charge to the other members of the RMC, including South Africa. Well, somebody's paying for it, yes. They pay for it. And when we pay for our satellite, we'll provide it free of charge to them. So they, no cost. Yes, sir. But we're sharing resources, essentially. That's the whole idea. But the discussion we have had with the Algerians is that they want the South African government to build their own satellite first, and then they will land a contract with us to build their satellite, because they don't have the engineering capability to build their satellite. And the reason why they're turning to South Africa is a very interesting one. Up to now, they've relied on the Europeans in terms of building their satellites, the Thalases of this world, the ADS Astriums. And one of the things they kept insisting on is human capital development. And the way human capital development works with these European companies is you don't actually see the satellite itself. So you have a dummy satellite sitting somewhere, and you don't get full exposure to the intellectual capital on that satellite. So there's limited tech transfer. And so the Algerians have been very frustrated in terms of building their own engineering skills around satellite manufacturing. And so they would rather work with South Africa than work with the European company, because they know they can get full access to the intellectual capital. Well, what are the implications for us is that if we build the intellectual capital there, we have to advance the research and development and innovation envelope so that we keep ahead of time, so we keep building human capital and on the continent. So those are the kinds of downstream industries we're looking at in the continent, and because we recognize as a leader around this. The IAC, the issue that has been raised, and I think I've kind of addressed this issue in terms of where the council sits and where the censor sits, and I think we will, going forward in terms of reviewing the policy framework, the legislative mandates, look at the effective institutional arrangements. And he did raise the issue around DST not being the lead. In fact, the DST used to chair a National Space Science and Technology Working Group when this idea first came in. Okay. And then the point, I think that's what my colleague was trying to make as well, was that this particular IAC is there's an industry focus. And so that's why the Department of Trade and Industry took the lead on this. And we said, okay, we'll support. And so that's why DTI is the main leader on this one. And DST will be supporting in terms of, as we said, the Africa Day, exhibiting some of the stuff we've done, and also taking up sponsorship in terms of profiling the SKA. I think we alluded to that last week. So that's in a nutshell essentially the responses to the questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to make probably a broad comment around the National Space Policy and what its intention was. To start with, I think we have seen that the National Space Policy is emanating from the Space Affairs Act. The Act requires that the DTI determines the policy which will be followed in the Republic, that means by everybody. So that's specifically what the policy is doing, is providing guidelines to all government institutions, to private institutions, all stakeholders as to what should be done. It's like saying, this is how you should go. And then that means all government departments, be it DST, DOC, Defense, and so on, they take the cue from the policy. For instance, Val mentioned about looking at the launch capabilities. The policy talks about the launch capabilities in a broad way, because the policy will not be specific, but it will say, we would want to see this in South Africa. For instance, in the launching capabilities, the policy says we want to have access to space, and then it stops there. South Africa wants to have access to space. Then another department takes it up to say, okay, if we want to have access to space, what do we do? What program do we put in place? So the policy, as I'm trying to say, will be implemented by a number of government institutions, state agencies, but the DTI will be sitting and looking at whether they are implementing that according to the policy as it is stated. Then one last comment, a chairperson, that I would like to make around the two institutions, SACSA and SANSA. My colleague has mentioned that the present council, because this is the fourth council or so now, we've got a report of the last council there. It will be reviewing the Space Affairs Act, because it's about how many years since 1993? 16 years since it was enacted. And there have been a number of developments, as we have seen, since that time. The focus that time was around dual-use technologies. And now, as I mentioned earlier on, we have mentioned the program, the space program of South Africa is focusing on implementing activities for socioeconomic benefits, disaster management, agricultural management, natural, and so on and so forth. So the focus is no longer now on exploration or defense activities and so on. So there will be a need for that. But what I would like to say and comment is that for all space stakeholders and the committee, probably there is a need to look at whether combining these two institutions will not hamper the industry. Because in that case, it would mean that probably SANSA, the regulatory part will be part of SANSA. So SANSA would play a referee and a player. And we'd need to look at whether that function will be credible to itself. Will it be able to police itself and monitor itself? Will it be able to be fair to the industry when it's issuing licenses, whilst it is also in the same business of launching space assets? I'm not saying it should not happen, but I think there are a number of things that we need to look into as to whether they will be advantageous for the industry, or whether the industry broadly will be disadvantaged or not by that mode. But the council is will be doing that for us, so that we can be able to see what we, how we move forward.
You see, actually, what you are saying now is the problem that exactly, because TTI is an industrially oriented, so it can also regulate, because then exactly there is a bias. We need an independent body if we are sure about regulation. So that is exactly, it's good, it comes from you now. It's very good at the end, you've caught yourself up. You see? Exactly, that is exactly, that is our concern. I mean, the duty of oversight, role of parliament is exactly that. That there's something not going right here, you see. Because look, the person who is your chair of Space Council, he operates this thing because he comes from astronomy. But he's the one who also gives a license and regulation. Can't be right, you see. Yeah, the chair of Space Council, he does actually, it's the launcher of satellites. But he comes, he has been taking this side to be there. That's why I'm having a problem about this arrangement. But it doesn't matter. I mean, I think he has said it mouthful. Dr. Musab has said, but exactly these are some of the things that we have been looking into. It's good that they come from here, the end, unaware, you see. Thank you very much for that, for approving my concern, you see. So I think these are things that you must go and look into. I am saying that we are not going to jeopardize the arrangements that you currently have. But if we were to talk outside of this, I'll tell you the details of what I feel that things have not been done right correctly, you know, in the way they are as a present. But it's fine, you see. As long as we are agreed, you have a principle that you feel it's supposed to be applied. He has a principle, he has a supportive principle that we have to look into this. I think somewhere you are right. I think then we're getting there, you see. So, by the way, I also, that is exactly the role of a chair. A chair is not supposed to simply sit here and listen to questions and answers. It's also supposed to direct the meeting and give some input so that the members must have a direction of what to discuss in the correct direction. That's part of my role. And that's why I decided to brainstorm this question so that I should create this debate, you see. And you can see now where we've come to. All of us agree that things are not as right as we thought when they first came. Okay. Thank you very much. I think we have reached on what we wanted, but I think we must start also to get very ready for the Astronautical Congress, because it's almost around the corner. It's almost around the corner, and we need to really coordinate between you and also Parliament. You see. I value that Congress. I saw, especially in the disaster management, you know, that some of the, you know what has happened in Japan? They were showing all that has happened. You see, once the thing has happened, the satellite technology, the space science comes in immediately, but when it sits at a commercial level, it becomes even unhelpful. Because we are not helping people who are dead, we are helping those that are still safe, or there's those that you can still save, you see, to move them away from the scene of danger. So it's very, very important as far as I'm concerned. But that's why I say it involves a lot of science. Then many people take it for granted, you see. I'm glad you've mentioned a few of them that are just day-to-day activity at social benefit field. Without wasting time, I think we have come to the end of this presentation. I think we've gained a lot, and I'm very happy that almost everybody has got his answer back or her answer back. I think this will be a very good experience when the Congress comes here for people who are not there to see what... Actually, one of the things, just on passing, they Americans, the head of NASA was there. He said that all along they have been thinking that they will get to Mars. It will take 5 years to get to Mars. Now they've created systems which will only take them 6 months to Mars. And actually, only 2 weeks ago, I listened to a certain coverage from the international channel that the Russians actually, because they said the most problematic thing now is only to orientate human beings who are going to get there, because once you go to Mars, you will disappear into the stars. You will never see anything again. No moon, no earth. People who are in space now, they can still communicate with us. Communication then takes, when I talk to you, you will only listen to what I have said now after 20 minutes. You see. And so they were saying that one of the things is the psychology of a human being in isolation. What effect it will have. And they've finished 250 days now of their training. People are coming from there. So I am very much interested in the space technology. So I am the good supporter. I think you are coming with more information than that.
Chair, just two things. The American private launch market is driven by an ex-South African. He left Cape Town when he was 17 years old. He didn't want to, you know, do his military duty, so he didn't agree with that, and he left. It's a guy called Elon Musk. So he's an ex-South African, which is very interesting. Well, I don't think the Americans will let him go. Just to also point out, yeah, he knows too much. The other thing is, there is a launch of a communication satellite at the end of this month, on the 30th of March. It's launched by a South African company called New Dawn. It's an Intel satellite. It's an American satellite, and it's owned by South African. The previous DG of communications, Andile Nkaba. So that's being launched at the end of March. Yeah. Yeah. So that, just to highlight that.
No, that's actually, I think those who have not had time to go to the satellite application center of CSIR in Adel PSCO, in Moscow there. So what you're discussing about what the problems that are there with the Sumbandila, they were showing us them images there. We could see all of it. We know what the problems are. Very interesting. Anyway, thank you very much for all the members, especially of the other portfolio community who have joined us here. I hope we should continue working together. We are working together very well with the chair of trade and industry, because there are many things common. We've also found some very good common ground with the chair of transport. There are many things common also with transport. That's why we went there to that coastal